Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. This is an amazing platform. I use it on both podcasts. It has worked wonders for me. It's so amazing how easy it is to navigate. If you want to sell products, t-shirts, soap scents, whatever it is, Ryan, you want to sell, this is the way to do it. You could see what your bestseller is right there, analytics, how much you're making this month, what products are selling the best. It's really fantastic. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify's there to help you grow.
Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way.
Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/inside.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Guys, I want to thank you for all your support. And don't worry, Inside of You is still hanging around. We're doing it, but without your support, we wouldn't be doing it. And I see so many people wearing shirts and telling their friends. And I've just been enjoying the hell out of this. I really found purpose. And I found you, and you found me. And so keep listening and spread the word. On another good note, before we get into Matthew Lillard, I have a new podcast. Of course, Inside of You will still air, don't worry, on Tuesdays. But starting on Monday, August 26th, In Love with Michael Rosenbaum and Chris Sullivan. Chris Sullivan, This Is Us, nominated for an Emmy. Guardians of the Galaxy. What else? The Nick. I mean, the guy's been in everything. He's the nicest, sweetest guy. He was a guest on Inside of You. And we just became friends. And we're like, why don't we do a podcast? He's married. I'm single. We talked to our married friends. My ex-girlfriend was on the show, on the new show. And she brought her baby in. And like, why didn't it work out with us? It's just a real interesting perspective on relationships. And we talk about what we're grateful for, what we love. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Today, on Inside of You, we're going to air the teaser for In Love with Michael Rosenbaum and Chris Sullivan. And it's a 5-minute teaser. I hope you'll listen to it. Follow us on all the social media at In Love Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. There's a hotline. You can call up and leave messages and ask us questions. Chris and I will be happy to answer them. 323-207-5676. I'm going to let you listen to the teaser. Then we'll get into Matthew Lillard. But remember, every Monday, starting on the 26th, In Love with Michael Rosenbaum and Chris Sullivan. Let's listen to that teaser. Welcome to In Love with Michael Rosenbaum
and Chris Sullivan,
where we explore the universal language of love,
walk through the struggles of love lost,
and together navigate the bumpy and gratifying road to happiness.
Loving me, loving myself, working on my state of mental health. And I never thought it would go this far. You said we'd just be friends, but I'm standing here full of emptiness. I confess, I'm a beautiful man.
You know, I called you up, Chris, and I said, I want to do a show with you because I like you. You were on my podcast, Inside of You, mm-hmm. with Michael Rosenbaum. That's and right. I just was like, I like you. You're a good human being. And I, as I get older, I want to surround myself with better human beings, people I care about, people who care about me, people who want to see me do better.
Right.
And I just felt like instantly you said, hey, every day I like to text a friend what I'm grateful for mm-hmm. in the morning. And I was like, what? Who are you? You don't do this in Hollywood. And I started like finding myself texting you going, Chris, I'm grateful for my dogs. I'm grateful that I woke up this morning. I'm grateful even to my ex-girlfriend for dumping me. I'm grateful for, and by being grateful, it's a necessity in life. Mm-hmm. And it just made me think, I want to do a podcast about, I don't even know what it's about in the beginning until we sort of hashed it out. We kind right. of talked about it.
Well, we said, let's talk about the things that we're in love with. There's enough negativity flying around. There's enough yeah. sarcasm. There's enough irony. So right. let's talk about the things that we love. Let's talk about the people we love. Let's talk about how we love others. Let's talk about our friendship and how
yeah,
it's growing.
Life in general. And it's just not, you know, it's not always good. Like, you know, there's lost love. I've been brokenhearted. Everybody out there has been, you know, they've had their heart broken. You've That's had right. your heart broken. It's like, how do you keep love? How do you deal with lost love? This is a show. About what, Chris?
Well, it's a show about being in love.
Being perpetually single.
Sharing your life with someone.
Sleeping with two dogs.
We're going to talk about what it means to be vulnerable.
I don't know what that means.
I know. We're going to talk about couples therapy.
I'm going to talk about going to couples therapy alone.
We're going to talk about having respect for your partner.
Farting whenever you want.
See, on the In Love podcast, we are going to break down things that we love, and we will talk to you, our listeners, and our guests about the things that they love.
Yeah, and in the end, we hopefully will come out better friends.
Better lovers.
Well, not you and me.
But yeah, they get it. And better human beings.
Yeah, I think that's good.
We'll have our listeners call the In Love hotline, yeah. answering your questions.
I like this because this is kind of cool. So every week, we'll have a hotline. The In Love hotline number is 323-207-5676. And you guys, your questions will be answered, hopefully. You know, we'll pick the best ones, keep them short, you know, like 20 seconds or 30 seconds. And we're going to do to the best of our knowledge between a single guy who's been single his whole life, guy who's married. You know, we've been through everything together. We're going to give you our opinion on what things you should do. Or what
ask
you should
us
do.
Questions about love, about yeah. life, about relationships.
80s yacht rock.
We have all of the answers on that subject.
Yeah, and you know what? Celebrity guests and their partners will come in on some of these shows. They'll give us some insight into what makes their relationships work. And you know, celebrities are fucked up. You know, their relationships hardly ever work.
Most of the time.
Can you get Mandy Moore and her husband?
No, but I can probably get Michael Moore. Listen, we're going to bring my wife in, Rachel.
Yeah, dude, I think that's a great idea because I want to hear the shit because there's no way it's a perfect marriage.
Listen, what we have realized that, especially when it comes to relationships, it's not about the one. There is no the one. It's about the work. And you put the work in and you get out what you put in.
I like that.
We're also going to talk to your ex-girlfriends.
We are.
To your assistant.
Mm-hmm,
to your friends.
She signed a non-disclosure.
That's right. Well, we're tearing it up because because we are going to discuss why you are single and what keeps going wrong.
But if anybody's listening to this that's a girl, which hopefully we'll have a lot of female listeners, maybe they won't want to be with me. Because I'm going to be honest and vulnerable about things. I'm not going to give you a bunch of bullshit.
Listen.
That's one of the things I like about this show. This is going to be us being honest. And anytime we're going to call bullshit.
That's right. Honesty and vulnerability, even in situations where someone may have flaws or may have some kind of damage, is attractive, Michael.
Thank you, I think, Chris. No, I do.
Hey.
I am damaged. I think we're all damaged.
We're all broken people just trying to put ourselves back together. And maybe on this podcast, we can help each other do that.
Every week, come join us and hopefully become better people in this dark, dark world. Let's bring some light into this world, brother.
A little bit of love.
In Love with Michael Rosenbaum.
And Chris Sullivan.
We're a beautiful man. Yeah, yeah.
You're blown away by my.
You're a palace of masculinity. This is a palace of masculinity.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Why?
Because first of all, you have gear. Like you have stuff. You're a collector. Your nature is to collect things. I don't have that. So I look around and there's like jerseys, masculine jerseys, and they're signed by dudes who are probably sweaty when they signed it.
Am I covering up something? Is that what you're insinuating?
You have great abs. in your
No, I don't. Not so much right now.
What are you talking about?
Well, I don't have great abs. You haven't seen my abs. Anybody with a t-shirt could cover their abs. I look like a thin guy, but maybe my abs are just like abless. I'm telling you, I don't.
I really don't want proof. I want you
to look like you're in good shape.
I'm in this.
You just did a movie.
Not in good shape.
You just did a movie?
No, no.
You just did something because your hair is really handsome.
Oh, yeah, yes. I have blonde hair.
Now, I like it. I think you look good in blonde.
My my wife is not appreciative. She is not interested in having a husband middle-aged with blonde.
Like,
what do you think? You're 20. How old are you? Why do you have these young kids? Look at, he makes me feel old. God damn it.
I'm 25. Look,
now, let me tell you something. Isn't it exciting for you because your wife gets to have sex with a different person almost?
She's not interested. We're not having sex with.
I mean, because she doesn't like your hair.
Yeah, well, because we've been together for 20 years. What's the longest partner you've ever
3 years. I like how you said partner, too.
Well, I'm just saying.
You're very PC.
I'm not going to assume anything in this day and
Listen,
age.
Listen, a lot of people have assumed I'm gay in the past. Well, not a lot, but.
Is that true?
Yeah. My mom, my family, friends. You know, when you're in Hollywood and you're an actor, I've played transvestites. I've been gay in movies. People, you know, could say that. But I'm very comfortable with my sexuality, so it doesn't bother me.
Sure.
I'll kiss a man on the lips. I'd kiss you right now if you've brushed your teeth. It's all about good breath. It's not about gender.
I've had coffee.
So you can have coffee breath.
Yeah, it's probably not the best kiss you've ever had.
Do you?
I'm pretty scratchy, but I do have blonde hair, so that would be an intimate moment.
Thank you for allowing me to be inside of you today, Matthew Lillard.
That's nice.
You don't like Matthew, you like Matt.
I like anything this side of shithead.
Really?
Yeah. How long have you been doing this, by the way?
This podcast?
Yeah.
I mean, really, we had a launch in June was our real launch, like to start the show.
Did you bank a bunch of them?
Yeah, we banked quite a few. In fact, we have... You know, if I go off to do a show or whatever, a movie, I have like a comfort, like a 3 month zone.
Oh, wow.
So I have a lot. But, you know, we bump up. Like if, you know, the guest is good, no pressure. Or if something's coming out.
I'm stripping right now. Well, I'm stripping. I'm nuding up. I'm going to do the entire nude.
Dude, you're taking your shirt off right now. This is amazing. Oh, my God. You have a great body. See how I could spin that and people think you're really naked?
Oh, this is terrible. Now they know you're lying. I've always been that tall guy who was oddly fat on the inside.
Well, you did a movie about a kid who was overweight, right?
I did. I directed a movie called Fat Kid Rules the World.
Yeah. Was that any of that inspired by, like, you?
Of course, yeah. Thank God.
How? Were you fat as a child?
I was.
Fat's not the right word. What's the word? Obese?
I don't think I wasn't obese. It doesn't matter.
Cherubic?
Here's the funny thing. People are like, I always talk about my weight. For some reason, I always make a joke about not having abs or... It doesn't matter actually what you are physically, because you can be in good shape. If you still feel like you're a fat kid, then you are always going to feel like a fat kid.
Do you know what's funny is I still feel like the smallest kid in high school. The kid that got picked on, the kid that didn't get laid, couldn't get nailed in wood shop.
Right.
You know, I do feel like that. I feel, even though I have confidence and all this stuff, but I still have that feeling of like that little boy who didn't get approval from his daddy. So I understand the psychology of that.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is you've always felt.
Yeah, I've always felt like, you know, I mean, for me, like high school wasn't a great time.
Why?
I didn't have a great time. Well, I had a severe learning disability.
What was that? Dyslexia?
No, it wasn't dyslexia. I couldn't process auditorily. So if you tell me the rules of math. Like you explain it. Somebody has to explain it to you. And I have to look at it on the board and they explain it. That does not go through my brain.
Yeah, I think
if I read it, like if you give me a history book, I'm money. I could read at a really high
not
level.
Me.
I couldn't do math.
No, I'm the opposite. I like when people teach me things. If they're a good teacher and they can articulate in a way that's interesting and pleasant and... for some reason, there was those good teachers like my Mrs. Rao, my history teacher. She made history interesting. Mrs. Muller with English. We did Romeo and Juliet, and I got like an A- on the fucking quiz.
Sure.
Because she was interesting.
Yeah, but were you a good reader?
I don't think I'm a good reader. I think I have ADD. So what happens is I read, and then I read three pages and realize I don't know what the fuck I just read.
Right. And I got to do something else.
Do you do that, or you read and you comprehend? You get it.
I had really crazy reading comprehension.
See, that's amazing, because I think that's why it's harder for me to learn lines these days.
No, it's because you're old. How old are you now? How old are you? No,
old.
It is. It happens. Dude, your brain starts to fall. I mean, it just doesn't stick
God.
Like it used to.
Well,
it's also, like, if you're working, if you're, like, you know, if you're working a lot, if you're on a show, like that muscle comes back fast.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm test screening for a show and now I'm kind of like, oh my God, I got to learn these lines. Sure. Can I still learn these lines?
And now you have to go and get a job in light of not having a job. Like it's always easy to get a job if you have a pocket full of money and you've been working and you go from one thing to the next thing. But it's when that space happens and like that fear starts to creep in that really screws
you up. Well, it's probably
up.
For you. You have a family. So you're not just thinking about Matt Lillard. You're thinking about Mrs. Lillard.
Sure.
What's the Mrs. name?
Heather.
Heather Lillard.
Yeah, yeah.
That's 19 years of marriage?
19 this year, yeah.
I don't know why I knew that. Maybe I read something.
That's crazy. That's a lot. Something.
And you have two children?
Three
children. 16, so you have to
14,
work. You can't F around. Like for me, I'm a single guy. I've had this house for many years. So I could sort of have a little bit of limit of effing around.
Oh, that's good. I don't have. I mean, I have that because we, you know, we have structured our life now that we can get through no matter what.
Do you have a business manager?
Yeah, I do.
Do you pay him like a monthly thing?
No. I mean, I do have somebody that helps me monthly sort of stay on track with taxes, but not like they don't pay my bills. I pay my bills.
You pay your bills.
Yeah. But there is this thing. I mean, people may not know is that there's a thing in Hollywood that people will pay a percentage of your check to have somebody basically write your checks for you. So you don't have to ever worry about your own money.
And you always hear about the Billy Joels of the world and the rappers, MC Hammer, who then go bankrupt.
Yeah. And I somebody used to took do all it. Their money. I used to do it. I mean, I used to be
because you were
famous.
Told by your agent, you need a business.
Yeah. And I also I made money and I didn't really care. And I was a kid like this bastard here. I was 20, 26 or 27 years old and you're making money.
Tyler's not making money. That's the difference with you two.
but people would be like.
He's making money off this editing of our show.
What a treat.
He's really good.
I'm broke as shit. But,
so you do not need
Michael
a business
manager. Michael
doesn't
really pay me at all, actually.
You do not need a business manager.
Wait a minute. I'm paying you.
But they would.
I guess so.
How much? $100 and you get a credit in junior college.
Yeah, well, he gets paid, per podcast. He edits the podcast.
That's good.
He's been with us since the beginning, right?
Yeah.
And he's fantastic. I know we went off on a tangent.
We're back inside of Tyler. Tyler, we're back.
But, I'm not going to tell you how much he makes, but I think it's a fair thing.
Yeah.
But I think he's worth a lot more. If this was a blow-up kind of podcast, like just blowing the shit up, so it's good.
Right.
But, if it gets bigger.
What is blowing up?
I mean, like our buddy Dax, he comes over one day, he does my podcast, and then he gets the idea, I want to do a podcast because I liked yours. And then all of a sudden, he then goes, hey, can I borrow Rob, my producer Rob, who's usually sitting where Tyler is? And I go, sure, you're one of my best friends. You can have anything you want. Take my house. And then next thing you know, he's gotten hundreds. I mean, he's huge. That podcast is huge. I think I got podcast of the year or some shit.
Oh, that's good.
So I wonder what I'm doing wrong. And then I think, wait a minute. They know a lot of celebrities. They're on fucking Ellen.
They're
Krista.
The two of them are big.
Yeah, and they're the most humble people in the world. It sickens me. They're so good.
They're dear humans.
They're dear humans. I look on Instagram and it's like, she's doing something for teachers. She's doing something
Teacher
for
of the
cancer.
Week.
She's doing, and I'm sitting there going, "Hey, I'm on Cameo." what the fuck's wrong with me?
Well,
I'm not rich as them. I'm not rich.
No, it's not. It has nothing to do with rich.
Do you do that Cameo thing? Have you done it? Now, here's the thing. I heard some things. People are like, "Oh, it gets a bad rap. Oh, it gets, but it's a contract. Some people love it. And my buddy Sean Astin, who's in Rudy,
I like Sean,
great guy. And he's like, Trump, you should do this. I'm like, why? He's like, because people who will never meet you, who might want to meet you, have the opportunity to meet you, and you can't talk to tons of people, thousands and thousands of people, and say happy birthday or have a great wedding. But with this, you can. So people can go on there and go, Matt Lillard, I'm a huge fan. I've always been a fan of yours, and I never can meet you because I live in fucking Turtleneck, Saskatchewan.
Sure.
And I just want to, look, if somebody writes me sends me a letter with a picture, I sign it and send it. I don't make them pay for it.
Right.
I do it. You send me a picture, I'm going to.
Do you do conventions?
I do conventions.
Yeah.
And here's what I think about conventions, because at first, there's part of me that was like, ah. And then I thought, you're an idiot. Where do you go for vacation, Matt? What do you like to go?
We don't really go. I mean, we're going to look at college.
Not with that hair.
Friday.
Not with that hair. not with my wife.
No, we don't. I mean, we'll go to Europe once. We try to go to Europe.
Okay.
Get the kids out.
Fair enough. You go to Europe. These folks, they love sci-fi world. They love Harry Potter. They love Smallville. They love Scream. They love whatever. And it's their vacation.
Sure.
So they're there to spend money and get an autograph. Now, would it be worth my time if I just was like, hey, I'm going to go there once a month to a different place and just sign autographs for the hell of it and pay for my own flight? I just couldn't do that.
Right.
Who would do that? So this is a thing like, and I always like, you know, I think it's important, like when you give a lot of attention to someone. Yeah, at the end of those days, I'm exhausted.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because you're just like going, hey, man, what's going on? Hug me and pictures whatever. And you make their experience like as great as you can make it.
Look, I always, when I started, because I do them now, and, you know, when I started doing it, I was like, this is really transactional. I feel stupid. I mean, I feel like I'm stealing. I mean, if you ran into me on the streets, at a mall, wherever you are, I'll sign anything for
anything,
anyone.
Me too.
Anything. And, you know, I was like, why am I going to ask for money? And this, it's weird. It feels like a weird thing. And then I got there and then I realized there's a way to transact with somebody that you can affect change in somebody's life in less than 2 minutes.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. You can find that kid that fell in love with SLC Punk or, you know, is a Scream fan who's
Scooby-Doo.
Of course you've got this, you've got a gay kid in the Midwest, or you've got this kid who's cutting himself or a drug. You know, there are people out there that you giving them a hug, dealing and talking to them and seeing them and asking them how they are, can that transaction, that human transaction, can change somebody's life in a very quick sort of, in a moment. And I like it. I mean, look, it's also a way that if you're not working, that there is a way to make, to be able to feed your kids. As our business changes, like, look, as we used to make a lot more money than what we make now. I mean, our industry is now run by people who are trying to make the most money possible and trying to squeeze everything out. And part of that is in our side. I mean, on the acting side, they're going to go pay number one and number two and number three on the call sheet. I'm not usually that guy. And so they are going to get you for as little as they possibly can. And, you know, the ability to like sort of feed your kids, keep your kids in school, get them to college, a lot of that has happened, in a couple ways. My wife went back to work. We changed the way we live our life. We changed sort of the dynamic of our house.
Yeah.
And, and these moments, these cons are a big part of like getting through. It's been awesome.
You said something just now and it made me think about an interview I watched with you.
Oh my gosh. Do you research everyone before they sit down?
No, I'm very quick. Here's the deal. I just go off the cuff.
Sure.
You know, I don't care about that stuff. But what I like is talking to real people, their insecurities, their anxieties, or what makes them tick, what makes them successful, what makes them, it's more of like, it's a kind of therapy for me to be a better person in the audience. So that's what that's kind of like. So the research is kind of like, it doesn't really matter, but I did watch one interview, and in an interview, I think it said something like, if you said this, tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
That if you're number one on a call sheet, the movie's probably bad.
Yeah.
You said that.
I probably did.
Why would you say that?
Well,
here's why, first of all, you say your answer, I look at you and I'm like, if Matthew Lillard's number one on a call sheet, I'm doing the movie. I think he's a terrific actor.
Right.
He's got charisma out the ass more than most people.
Right.
He's a great guy. He's talented as hell. I want to work with him. He looks like fun. You're number one as an actor. I'm going, great. Who else? Let's read the script now.
Here's the reason I said, first of all, I'm making a vow. I've made a vow this year to stop with the self-deprecation.
I do it too. Same it's
level,
okay.
At the same level that I do it. But the reality is that somebody investing money in making a movie, you have to spend a lot of money. I mean, you can do it for nothing, but most movies, you need $3 million. Somebody that's going to invest $3 million is usually going to make an investment in somebody that's going to potentially get them more than their money back. And in general, it hasn't been me. Look, I was in a movie called SLC Punk. I was number one on the call sheet. I was, super proud of that work. I loved doing it.
Tyler loves that movie. I love that movie. It was so good.
It's a killer little movie. And Scooby-Doo, I was the highest ranking human on that movie. It did pretty well.
Wait, the highest ranking what?
Human. Like Scooby-Doo is number one.
I
was number two.
You were number one.
I was number two. But
so that was a payday.
Highest ranking human, which I like to say a lot.
Yeah.
But those moments are hard. I mean, like, those moments are hard to get. And the longer I've been around, I used to as a kid, I used to chase it so bad. I used to want to be that star. I wanted to be the guy. Look, if you're playing basketball, you're playing hockey, you want to be the guy in the last, you want to have a shot to win the game.
You want to be,
You want it to matter. I don't want to be number 10 on the call sheet. If you like me and you believe in me as an actor and you're like, people like working with me, then why don't you ever get that shot? You know, why don't you get that shot?
Yeah. Quit hitting the goddamn table.
I want that shot. You
Tyler, every time you're hitting the table, I like how active you are, but he's like looking and going, yes, I understand.
Yes, you want that shot. So the reality is that I've been number one on that call sheet. And a lot of times the script, when it gets down to me, isn't a great script. It's not a great director. It's not a lot of money. And it's bad. You know, it's bad. Like, the best script is going to the guys that are going to make you the most money back.
Yeah.
And the reality is that the script that comes to me that's number one on the call sheet, in general, hasn't been a great script, hasn't been a great opportunity. It's like, you know, I can get every bad movie offer out there for a horror film. It doesn't make it us. It doesn't make it, you know, a great horror movie.
Do you? All right, two things.
Yeah.
First of all, stupid question, but do you give it all you got no matter what movie it is?
Dude, look at my whole career. I am chewing up every scene. I'm doing everything I can to be incredible. Everything. I have this idea of, look, I have always gone by and subscribed to the ideas. You have to try to be brilliant. You have to try to be fucking the most amazing actor in the world. You're going to fall short, make mistakes, but you are reaching for brilliance, and you can't reach for brilliance by hitting a mark and saying a line. So I have always brought, especially to my movie career, especially when I was younger, this idea of like, fuck, go for it. Do something incredible. Look, I think that I've reached moments in my life that I'm super proud of, and I've watched movies where I look back and I'm like, oh my God, what was I thinking? But, you know, I mean, there are moments in my life. I mean, look, I just did this thing in New York. I dyed my hair platinum blonde. I'm like, why are you doing that? I'm like, because I mean, the guy's on the run. He's like going to change the way he looks. And they're like, well, okay. You know what I mean? You're like the monster of the week on the show. And I'm like, this is what I want to do. And then there's a scene in the movie, in the show.
You can't say what it is.
I don't think I can. I mean, yeah, I guess I can. I'm an FBI. So there's a pilot for FBI's Most Wanted. It's on CBS.
Right.
And there's a scene in the show where he's like losing his mind. He's like, you know, he is... You know, he's at his wit's end, and he's, you know, he's not a good dude. And like, the director, who I loved, came up to me on the first day, and he's like, hey, whatever happens in this scene happens. It's like super dramatic. I was like, well, what does that mean?
Did that freak you out?
Well, yeah, because I know what he means. He wants it to be an emotional scene. He wants there to be.
I thought he was telling you to do a Brando or something. No.
Well, he was like, but he was like, the thing he wanted was to know that you could go, like that you should go there.
Right.
And the pressure of that moment's a big deal. You know, it's big.
Do you like when the director gives you a note like that?
I don't, because I want you just to give me what you want, and my job is to provide you what you need.
Right.
The idea of like, I don't want to talk about it, because then it makes it bigger than an act. In trying not to make it a big deal, he actually made it a much bigger deal. But in this moment, look, there's a three-page scene where you're like, okay, I get what my creative emotional instincts tell me this kid's at the end of the line, right, and he's losing his mind. So on that day, like, your job is to lose your mind. I mean,
and you lost it.
Yeah.
Did you walk away thinking, was that too much?
Oh, I'm always too much. I am always too much. But I have no fear in being too much.
But listen, if you wouldn't have been too much, like Scream, nobody would have done. I auditioned for that. Same role.
That's funny.
And I remember I go, oh my God. It's like when I watched that movie Primal Fear with Ed Norton. I go, oh, yeah. I auditioned. I tested for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, this guy's so much better than me. You know, and I looked at you in Scream and I go, oh my God, no wonder they went with this guy. Different. I couldn't compete. You were so, there was moments where there's spit coming out of your mouth. There's like such intensity that you're like such in a moment that I'm like, is he improvising this whole thing? It felt real.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's a chance you take. And if you hit genius on a couple of those,
yeah,
and then you don't on the others, isn't that okay?
I mean, look, I look back at my career and be like, yeah, if you look at Scream now, it's hilarious. I mean, it's just this chewing of scenery and just like beyond, like it's gone beyond sort of normal acting, which in the moment felt right. The movie, it sort of worked in the movie. I mean, you know, obviously.
Sort of.
You know,
dude,
I mean,
you stole the movie.
Well, I don't know about that.
Dude, Tyler, did you ever see Scream?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
I was talking about earlier, that's like one of the most like replicated for like years and years after that. It was like Two Killers, like that.
Yeah, it changed.
It was iconic.
But yeah, it definitely, look, that movie came out of nowhere in that, you know, Wes hadn't done a great movie in a long time. you know, nobody had ever really put two actresses that were on TV. I mean, Courtney Cox and Neve Campbell were both on TV at the time. Right. That crossover was not happening at that point. You were either a movie actor or TV
actor.
You got
Henry Winkler.
Henry Winkler comes back as the Fonz. It kind of came out of nowhere and it was released on Christmas Day. And you're like, what is this thing? And I'll never forget the opening weekend, we didn't do great numbers. And this was before the internet. So you like you sort of had a call in and your agent would tell you the numbers you had for the opening weekend. And it wasn't great, but
Don't worry, we got hackers. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Well, Wes Craven called and said, congratulations, you're in a big hit. And I was like, well, he didn't have great numbers. And he said the exit polls were like nothing they'd ever seen before. So they knew even that opening weekend that the exit polls were like off the charts. And it's sort of, you know, next thing you know, 7-8 weeks later, you had $100 million party, and it's like, wow, this is crazy. This movie kind of came out of nowhere.
Were you getting a lot of offers at that time?
No, dude, I've never got a lot of offers. Even then, like, everyone's like, a Scream changed your life. It didn't change my life at all.
So they're like, get Skeet Ulrich, get this guy.
Yes. So I mean, Skeet went on to do like 3 big movies after that. Nev did great. I mean, Courtney obviously was going back to make $1 million an episode, and you know, and everyone else in the movie went on to make the sequel. And I was dead. So I was like, oh,
you know
so
what?
That's
in,
where
in
you.
In a way, I mean, like, even when I did Smallville, it was a huge success, but Tom was getting offers to do movies.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't. I wasn't really getting many offers. I was like the bald, weird guy. And I was like, huh, I thought they liked me. I thought I'm doing a good job here. But why am I not getting offers? Well, you're not 6'5" and fucking gorgeous. That's why. And I'd say,
Son of a bitch.
But, you know. It is.
But it is that thing. But doesn't that drive you? I mean, that for a long time in my life, in my career, that drove me crazy.
Oh,
it drove me crazy that Freddie, who I love, was off making movie after movie after movie after movie and paying gazillions of dollars. And I was fighting for like, you know, for scraps. And I'm like, dude, why? What do I have to do? Like, where do I get the win? And I always, like for me as a kid, I was like chasing that desperately to be that number one, to be that movie star. And it wasn't until I've been doing it now for 30 years, 29 years or something, 28 years. And I just think that it becomes way more about journey, way more about tribe, way more about fellowship, being surrounded by people that you love and doing the things you like rather than chasing a call sheet number.
Yeah, not only that, because I felt the same way. I mean, I'm still working on we're always working on ourselves, but for so long, I just was like, you know, I want to be this guy. I want to be this star. I want to be. You got it when people are like, what are you doing now? You want to be like, oh, I'm doing this and I'm doing this.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden I'm so exhausted of always trying to be perfect and great and being something that, you know, I want people, you want to get acceptance. You want to get, there's a lot of psychology to it, right? But there comes a time when you just got to go. Because it killed me. I think it ultimately it was killing me, like just exhausting, where the point where I was just like so tired all the time because I was just always on, always trying to be, and I've worked on myself religiously, but I don't know. I think it's tough because especially you seem like a perfectionist, or at least you were.
And no,
were
not
you
at
were
all.
You not hard on yourself?
No, in fact, I love watching my. I'm like, I don't.
You're not hard on yourself.
No, not at all.
You don't get like in your head. You don't get nervous. You don't get anxiety. You don't get.
No, I get. I mean, I get anxiety, sure, and I do get nervous. But I don't know how you came up, but I was a kid that had nothing in high school. I wasn't great at sports. I mean, I played sports, but I wasn't great at them. And we talked about it. I struggled in school. And then when I found acting, I found the one thing that I loved. So for me, I've always loved what I do. Like if I wasn't acting in a movie, I'd be doing Man of La Mancha in Pacoima. I mean, I would be doing something in the arts.
Sure.
At some point in my life, I was like, I wasn't working and I was in this big house and, you know, I'd made a lot of money and then I was transitioning from being a young actor to a man. And it was, you know, it was a good long stretch there where I was like, oh, I could be the guy that never comes back. I'd be Judd Nelson. I could be, you know, all these kids that we grew up with that never transitioned to being a man. And it's
like
hard.
Jake Ryan in 16 Candles.
I mean, where's Jake? I mean, you know, that kid was on fire and
I think he's a carpenter out in Utah or something.
But we know that.
Good for him.
Yeah. But yeah, but he was like, I'm out.
He was so awesome.
Yeah, he was amazing. Jake Ryan, he was gorgeous. But the idea of like being that guy and not getting a chance to come back and not doing what you want to do would have been really hard. So I was like, what do I do? Do I go and change jobs and become a carpenter and leave? Or do I double down and stay and chasing a dream? And so I would like, we sold our house, we sold our cars, we sort of changed the way we live our life. My wife went back to work and I started teaching acting because I was like, well, worst case scenario, I'll just teach the rest of my life.
Where did you teach?
I teach at Vancouver Film School. So I go up there a couple times a year. Wow. I teach in LA. I'll fly back to New York to teach. I mean, I was like, oh, this is what I'll do. Instead of like becoming a carpenter, I'm just going to keep doing what I love. And that sort of restructuring of what's important, it's not about chasing, you know, the number one. It's not about that manic thing. It's about sort of the journey, you know, that sort of changed the way I walk through this career.
Yeah, that's amazing because, you know, similarly.
I have a mushy mouth.
Yeah, similarly. Tyler?
Similarly.
Yeah.
Fuck bastard. You. God a damn young it. Punk son with a of a
quick
bitch.
Brain, doughy eyes quick and mind, and curly, beautiful hair. Eyes. Similarly, I found acting like you. And that, I was like, oh my God, not being me is great. That was the difference. It wasn't that I did love it, but I was so scared of it. And I think I never lost that fear. It still scares me. I get when I, you know, have to read for something or I get something every day is like the same day. It's a Groundhog's Day where I'm so hard on myself because I want to be great. I want to be perfect. It's different.
Yeah, but that's what kills you. I mean,
that's what kills me.
Yeah, yeah. That's
too
that
much.
Chase of, there is no perfection. There is just the moment you're in. There is no way. There is nothing. You can't do that.
How do you stop it? How do you just wake up in the morning and not have anxiety besides Zoloft?
Look, it's practice, it's fellowship, it's training, it's understanding that no matter what you do in that room, it doesn't define who you are, that you're collecting hours to get to the end of your life. I mean, literally, the minute you let go of perfection, being accepted, needing that acceptance, the minute you let go of all that stuff, you're in the room and that's what people want. It's like I always say to the student, the kids I teach, I'm like, look, if a guy's at a bar and he comes up to you or, you know, a man or a woman and you can sense their desperation for you to want them, you can sense their desperation of like connecting or hooking up, like that is repulsive. And it's not, it's visceral. It's animalistic. You can feel somebody who's desperate, that need to be seen. It's the person that is in their own skin that is alive and you're like, oh, that's the person, that's the charisma, that's the thing I want. And it's the same thing with acting. The more you let go, the more you're like, hey, I'm here for this moment. Let's just do this thing.
To be in the moment, that's true. I always notice when I'm like, I have nerves and then I go in and I do something. There's something in my brain that goes, all right, being nervous is not working for you.
No, yeah.
You got to change. And I somehow can change it a lot of times where I just, boom, I hit. Like even if I start out weird, I go, you know what, fuck this in my head. And then I get right into it.
Right.
And sometimes that helps, but.
It's hard. It's hard. By the way, and especially when you know, when you're not working, you have kids to feed. And you need a job. It's not, you know, there's this thing going around right now called the dignity of work, right? And I think that the sense that working helps define you as a person and it gives you a purpose in life. And the fact that as actors, the reason they are so self-destructive, the reason that they end up lost on this journey is because you're supposed to be sad. I mean, there was this thing yesterday coming out that somebody in reality TV is now taking their own life again, and that there's this movement to take care of people that have been on reality TV because there's penchant for taking their own lives because you were somebody and now that's all removed and now you're walking through life and you don't know who you are and you don't have a job and you don't have a purpose. That is the stuff that kills actors and artists and reality contestants. I mean, this idea that there's dignity in work is an important thing for an artist. And the more you find other avenues to work, the more you feel like you have a purpose. We're going deep. Is it always this deep here on Inside of You? Is it always?
No, I mean, that's how I want it. I like this. I'm learning.
That's
See,
good.
I'm learning
oh, that's good.
From you. I'm okay. learning from you. You are a teacher.
I am. I love teaching. I love teaching.
You're really good. Because I'm like, I forget that I'm even interviewing you right now.
No, that's good.
I really am thinking, oh my God, all these things I want to do now. And like, how am I going to approach things? And I've just been taking a day at a time. And I'm trying to find, like, I'm 46 years old. And I'm still working on purpose. Like, this show gave me a little purpose.
That's good.
Because it's bizarre because my friends are, you know, you're an actor. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know. It's something about this that I find out more about me. I find out more. It's a moment where with everybody on their phones, I'm sitting here with you and I'm having a conversation and I'm not thinking of anything else other than you 20 minutes late.
I'm so late.
I don't care. And it's just like, you know, I don't know. It's this interaction that I really like. And then I noticed that people really love it. Like the guy walking past the car when you were pulling in.
Uh-huh.
He goes, dude, I'm listening to your John Cryer interview right now.
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm like, oh my God, that means a lot. And it's cool. And it's like, you know, people are affected by that. So whatever.
Look, I hear what you're saying. I think that goes back to purpose. That goes back to what am I doing, right? I'm a successful actor. I've been on these successful shows, but what am I doing with my life?
That's like, right. Like, that's right.
You know, the thing that people don't understand, you know, I once in class, I took out my book for the, you know, I took out my iPhone and I was like, hey, I want to go over my last year's calendar. And I'm doing this right now in front of the whole class. I got a whiteboard and I'm like, I'm just going to, I've gone through and I'm searching for all my appointments and I'm going to put together my most incredible year I've ever had. I was in the Descendants. So I was on like press tours and I was with George Clooney and, you know, we had done opening movies and like, on an Academy Award tour, you are going to events and you're like doing this whole thing. I'd done two independent movies and a play in Los Angeles. This was my year. Like I had an incredible year and I was like, and I was in class. So I was like, I was kicking ass. I was
confident.
An artist. But yeah. So I'm like, I'm going to go through and I'm going to count up my hours. We're going to round things off. Here's my auditions. Here's my pilot season. I'm going to go through and we're going to go, all of it's going to be counted and we'll round up. So I started going through and I started collecting these hours. And if I broken out, it had turned out, it was like an hour thing. I was like, this is my audition. This is what happened. Like I kind of walked my kids through like what my audition was like, if I remembered it or what it was like to do and you know, all these things. And at the end of it, if I calculated an 8-hour day, 5 days a week, I worked like 4.5 months over the course of the year. And I literally said, I will never in my life have a year like this as an actor ever, ever again. It won't happen because the amount of work was overwhelming. Like this is as good as it gets. And if I could lay out right now that this is the best year of my life, it's probably a great year for you. But in 4.5 months, that's not what kills an actor. This isn't what leads you astray. This is the best part of your year. It's the rest of the year that ends up destroying your humanity because you're like, what are you doing? What are you doing the entire month of November or December? Yes, okay, I know I should go to the gym. Yes, I could learn another language, but that's where you get lost. And that's what ends up being really hard.
And I think that's with everybody. Yes. I mean, you're not just talking about actors, you're talking about, you know, people who have real jobs, yeah. Not to say acting isn't a real job.
But it is for sure not. I mean,
we're making pretend. But like for all my friends in Indiana or friends in New York that have like wake up and 9-to-5 jobs, if you're just working and you're not doing anything for yourself or you're not doing anything that gives you more purpose, I think you could still fall into that category because I think it's humanity in general.
Yes, you have to have something. Like if you are on that grind, and look, my whole family's in Michigan and they're on the grind. I mean, they are Detroit blue collar trying to make ends meet. And, you know, it's that thing. You have to have something in your life that gives you fellowship. Like you have to be surrounded by people that you love. And that's family. And that's, you know, for a lot of people, that's church. For me, it was always the theater. I mean, I do play readings in my living room every 2 weeks to get people together to talk about journey, to talk about where people are at, to talk about.
So it's like AA for actors without the alcohol and drugs.
Yeah. We'll get cheap wine and cheap food and you sit around and cold read a play. And you're like, I'm not a dad. I'm not a husband in this moment. I'm an actor surrounded by people that I like to be around.
And what kind of people come to your house?
It's everyone. I mean, I've invited random. I mean, a waitress at a restaurant. I'm like, hey,
she came over and read?
Oh, yeah. So you'll come over and you're like, look, we have like, you know, it ebbs and flows. So if I'm working, it does, it's not happening. But if I'm not working and I need that thing to, you know, sort of like connect to the next.
Get the juices flowing.
Yeah.
And who's the biggest actor you had over there?
I don't really have a lot of big actors.
You have no big actor friends?
I don't have. It's funny because I, you know, in the back of my mind, I really want to do a podcast. And the
well,
thing
why don't
that...
you steal my editor and my fucking producer?
They're already busy.
I'm game, man. I work one day a week right now.
Oh yeah,
I'm available.
Well, he's gonna be my editor for the other podcast we're doing. Don't mention
you're
that.
Doing two.
I'm doing another one. Yeah,
nice.
Me and a buddy. I can't tell the buddy's name because we're gonna do an announcement. But
God,
you guys are listening. But
it's Brando.
We're gonna be doing another one coming soon. It's in the works. But go ahead.
But the part of it that I can't do is the part that you hunting me down. You did a great job of like, I wanted to do it, but yeah. I was like, I'm flaky and I don't, you know, the idea of sitting here and talking about myself for an hour is like, oh my God, who wants that?
But you didn't, but that's exactly what we're not doing. We're sort of talking about life and things. So it's a little different,
but it is different, but you're still like, look, the idea that I'm now thinking about, oh, I just told everyone in America that the hardest part of my life is not working for 6 months, 6.5 months is like, oh, you're such an asshole. You know what I mean?
It's filling your time and doing something purposeful. That's
that didn't
come across that way to me.
Well, because it does. I mean, look, I like talking about life.
Yeah.
I like talking about these things. But the hardest part for me is like, can you get people to sit across from you? Is it interesting for other people to do? And at the end of the day, like, who am I going to get? I have like 10 friends in this. I mean, I'm friendly with everyone. I mean, that's the weird thing I think about my life. And maybe you have a different experience. I moved to Pasadena. I had kids and a wife. Like, I am not part of the Hollywood cinema.
Yeah.
I am not in this world. My Rolodex has like, you know, 10 people on it that I love. I mean, I love everyone I've ever worked with. There's like three
everyone?
People.
Everyone?
Well, there's three people in my life I would talk shit about, but I would never do it personally. I would never do it publicly. Yeah. And there's three people that if you are working with that person and I know about it, I'll be like, hey, just FYI, that person's a jerk.
Does it rhyme with Feb Famble?
No, never.
Is she the nicest ever?
She's the nicest ever.
Feb Campbell.
But the
Skeeter.
You know, the idea of trying to bring now the whole podcast is like,
no, I'm not going to ask you. I'm not going to get you personal.
But the idea of like trying to get people in sit down is hard. I think that would be tough.
Let me say this. The core people that I usually hang out with are not celebrities. For the most part, I don't hang out with celebrities. Dax has a family. He's very busy, so we try to see each other. We text here and there.
Right.
I love him. So I have friendships that were like, hey, text, how are you? What's going on? Let's get lunch or something sometimes. But the core of my friends are, I have like a little band.
Right,
I have my friend Tom I've known 35 years. My friend Ken, 20 years. But it's the same people.
And how do you know them?
I grew up with Tom in Newburgh, Indiana. He lived down the street. He was popular. I wasn't. He wanted to be my roommate in college.
Have you ever had him on the show?
No, he'd be really nervous.
So what?
But maybe I should and see if it turns out right. It'd kind of be fun. My friend Rob, who works for marketing for homeless people, and you know, he's my lead guitarist. I hang out with just a bunch of guys who have real jobs, and
sure.
Like, you know. And by the way, I feel like I'm more grounded when I'm around them, and they keep me grounded.
Sure.
I think if you start hanging out with just celebrities and you're all around that, it's just like there's not a lot of. What's the word? Depth?
It's not even in my lexicon.
I mean,
I don't know. You know, I mean, I have famous friends, but that's...
Who's your most famous friend?
My most famous friend?
Most famous friend.
How do you define friend?
Somebody that you can call, you can text and go, hey, do you want me to grab lunch? And they're like, hell yeah, let's do it.
Like, hang out? I don't have that. I mean, I could... Seth Green and Dax. I mean, I can say, hey, let's get together.
Yeah, those guys are phenomenal.
Seth Green and Dax.
Right.
But then, like, you know, I mean, I've done, I mean,
George Clooney. If you,
I'm not, no.
You have his number?
Yeah, I have his number.
You have Clooney's number.
I think.
And you never thought of, like, saying, hey, man, I haven't talked to you in a while.
Email, for sure.
So you ever email and say,
hey, Clooney
Dog.
I would never do that. No.
Clooney Dog. It's been a while. Haven't seen you.
No, I would
never do
that.
I haven't seen you since The Descendants, biatch.
Oh, my God, no. I would never do that.
He would probably love it.
He would not.
Matt Lillard.
He would not love
that guy.
He would not.
Why would he not like it?
Because he's someplace famous and glorious, and he
hears from a real down-to-earth guy named Matt Lillard who lives in Pasadena, and he's like, dude, fuck yeah. I'm tired of hanging out with Tarantino and all these rich, pompous-ass people, and I want to hang out with Lillard.
Let's kick it.
I want to
play Dungeons & Dragons.
I want to play Dungeons & Dragons. I want to go to the Olive Garden in Pasadena, and I want to fucking just chill out with Lillard and his
Red
family.
Red stick bitches!
Right?
Let's lock down all of the Garden. Dude, it's the same reason, I mean, I would never, it's just not my life. Because I do think it goes back to who are you? My life is like, I'm the fat kid. That idea, like social anxiety, both of my kids go through some social anxiety stuff. And for a long time, I'm like, what are you talking about? You're super personable. You're charming as shit. Like, and then I was like, oh, wait. I have social anxiety. Me at a Hollywood party is like, get me out of here. Me at like a country club party, I'm like, oh my God, my skin is crawling. You put me with a bunch of artists, you put me with a bunch of actors, like I couldn't be happier. But when you put me outside of my element, I can't do it. It freaks me out.
You know what? I understand that. Because I have the same, I always feel like I don't belong. I always feel I hung out.
But do you think that's everyone? I think so?
I make it clear I'm uncomfortable. I feel like I have to be funny. I have to be on or they're not going to accept me.
Right.
And I'm boring. And I don't like, that's why it's like, I had so many arguments with like my representation, my manager, my agent who were like, dude, go to this. Go to the Golden Globes. I'm like, no, I don't have a movie or a TV show. Why would I do that? Go to this party. It's going to be a lot. It's important. And no, it's not. I can't do that. I don't have a... So I fought them forever. I'm somebody who, you know, I do podcasts. I do, you know, social media for the podcast. And I make funny videos and stupid shit. But like, I don't do the Hollywood thing, really.
Right.
Like you said, when you walked in, you're like, oh my God, why do you have a Napoleon Dynamite poster? Why do you have a Jerk poster? Why do you have all... autographed. I'm like, you know, because as a kid, that's all I did. I had movies. That's all I had was I watched movies. That right. was my life. And so now I'm still that kid in high school who, when he sees Wes Craven or when he sees, you know, not anymore. I like that. I'm like, oh my God, this is so exciting. I want to get your autograph. I mean, I don't say it right then. I'm very cool about it. Like Stallone, when I worked with him 2 weeks, we were at the Last Stand. I go, yo, Sly, you know, we were cool at that point. You called me Pippi Longstocking because I had all these dots on my face from the CGI or whatever. So he said, I go, hey, Pippi, what are you doing? I'm like, hey, will you sign my Rambo lunchbox? He goes, you got a Rambo lunchbox? What do you got? Like, how old are you? You're 46 years old, you got a Rambo lunchbox?
It's good.
And he
it's
signed good. It and had a thermos in it. He couldn't believe it. But...
Then did you have it before, or did you know you were working
Sly? No, I had it.
You
dude.
Found eBay.
No, I swear I had the Rambo lunchbox, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have the Rambo lunchbox.
Was that on Guardians?
That was on Guardians.
James Gunn may be my most famous friend.
Now, do you ever think, well, we could talk about this because James won't listen to this, and he's one of my best friends as well. Do you think you ever are like, dude, I killed it for him in Scooby-Doo. Why doesn't he put me in Guardians?
No.
I killed it for him in Scoop.
I mean, look, I tried out. I mean, I auditioned for Guardians.
I did too. I tested for the for Pratt's role, and I, you know, he was brilliant. I mean, I'm just saying, do you
I
ever...
didn't test for that. I went to, I did Taserface.
Oh, you're and the I, greatest Taser. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and I was like...
My buddy Chris Sullivan was, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, and I saw him the night, that same night he had a party, the same day I auditioned, and he came up to me. He's like, oh, my God, you were good. Thank God. So it was good. So I was in the running, but I didn't get
all
the
right.
job.
So yeah, he loves you.
I love him. I love him. And
yeah, that's the whole thing with that be. Stuff.
But I want, but I look, there's no doubt. Like somebody asked me on Twitter recently, what is the, you know, what role do you want? And I was like, whatever movie James Gunn's doing. And that's
really?
The God's. Yeah. Cause I love him. I don't know.
I do too. And some people will go, dude, he's doing Guardians. Why don't you ask him for? I go, you don't ask. He's one of my best friends. If he wants to put me in something, he'll think of me.
He knows. He knows I want his job. Yeah.
He knows
I want
the exist.
Job. Yeah. Yeah.
You know. And I was eternally grateful for doing Guardians.
But that's the thing is you go back to and you were in it. I wasn't in it. The idea of going back to like it's hard. I mean, you want to be number one on the call sheet. You want that job, and it's like even your good friend. You're not working for. I mean, that's the thing that's crazy to me. I mean, I look at the producers of Scooby-Doo. I'm like, you guys have made, like, you know, Richard Suckle and Chuck Rubin. You guys have made a lot of really big movies. There's not a part. You don't. Oh, there's no way. Nothing that I can. Can I come in an audition? Like, can I at least fight for the job?
Dude, I listen. The reality is, we've all worked. I remember I did Urban Legend right after Scream. It was, you know, people call it a Scream ripoff. Mm. But, you know, I enjoyed it. I loved it. I thought it was a fun movie. And all those huge producers, Neil Moritz.
Sure.
He came up to me one day and goes, you're the next Tom Hanks. Of Of course, I knew I was not the next Tom Hanks. Nobody could be the next Tom Hanks. But I loved it. I was young, eager. I was like, fuck yeah. Never heard from this guy. But he does all these big, giant movies that make billions of dollars. He couldn't have said, hey, Rosenbaum, you come in and give 10 lines in one scene and crush it?
Right.
Not one call. I could tell you this about so much. The one guy that does it, James Gunn, put me in a movie, and my buddy Dax Shepard. Dax Shepard, every movie he's made, he's on, Rosie, I got a role for you. Rosie, I got this for you. It's like when you think of working with your friends as the best time, how many times do I hear, hey, you're good friends with Jason Reitman, aren't you? I'm like, I am. I love Jason. Why hasn't he put you anything? I'm like, maybe I'm not right for the 500 roles he's
for every
maybe
role.
I'm not good. No, he auditioned me for something in Up in the Air, and I was not good. I was not good in the audition. I didn't take it seriously. I don't know. I just kind of winged it. I sometimes, you know.
Is that self-destructive?
It is. I don't want to put, here's the thing. I don't want to put so much, although I'm doing it right now. Sometimes you put so much work into something, then when you don't get it, it's like, fuck, I just felt like I just worked for 2 weeks for something that I didn't even get.
That's,
you know,
the best.
You know,
but at least, but I go back,
I know,
to,
I know, it sounds like, yeah, I know.
Okay.
No, go ahead, say
no,
it.
No, but the idea is that it's 2 weeks. At least you're working on something. That's 2 weeks of purpose.
Oh, you're calling that work. Okay.
Yeah.
It is work.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's that you're collecting hours. Our job is to collect hours, right? If you believe in 10,000 hours, you're like, oh, dude, I'm just collecting hours.
Lillard.
Yeah.
The light just went off. I now understand exactly what you're fucking talking about.
Yeah. Dude.
You're saying that 2 weeks of me busting my ass is fulfilling. It's like I just
put. Who cares about result?
Dude, give me a high five. Dude, that is. Do you hear this, Tyler? This is really good advice. This is like, Tyler, when you leave here and you're like, oh, I have to edit that shitty podcast. What are you going to do with the rest of the day? Go to the Coffee Bean? Why don't you go fucking
party somewhere?
I mean,
do something with your life.
You bastard.
I think it's a universal thing for like millennials right now to put so much stake in work and to put so much worth in how much you work. You know, there was a time where I was working like 1 or 2 days a week and I was like, how do I get that to five? How do I, what, why?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's super hard. And I do think that there's a lot of people out there who are doing work with the express purpose of a result that is going to further them.
Right.
And my argument is that if you're living the life of a craftsman, that it's actually just doing the work is the point. That it's not the shoe that you turn out that's important. It's the lifetime of shoes. And so, you know, if you're
a cobbler, I have to have a better work ethic, I think.
Well, I don't know. You're here doing this. I mean, this is a work ethic.
I really, by the way, worked hard. I'm going on this audition, first time in a while that it was something I really liked, and I've put some time into it.
That's good.
I have put some time into it because I think it's really good. And I think that's another thing. If you're like excited about something because you think it has potential and it's good, but like for me, sometimes when I'm like, I get sort of, what's the word? I don't know if it's bored or just lack of interest.
Apathetic.
But I'm like, oh, it's another one of these. They want me to play this guy, the same guy that I have done before, or they want me to do this, or not interested. There's this one with a huge director, huge writer, Oscar award winner that they wanted me to read for. And I didn't say no because I think the guy is brilliant. I think the whole thing's brilliant. It's just not what I want to do. I don't want to just say, oh, I'm working with an Academy Award winner, or I'm working with, that's not, I mean, I do.
Sure.
But I don't want to do something because it's everyone's perception of me. Of if I do it, they'll go, oh, he's working with, I just didn't particularly like what it was. I just didn't like it.
Yeah, yeah. What, the question isn't what you don't, what do you like?
Mm, I like you. I like Tyler. I like,
I mean, that's the thing is like, so I'm saying is that finding something that turns you on and chasing the shit out of it.
Whatever,
and that's the thing about
is.
Millennials. Like, you have to find what turns you on and just chase it. And it's going to end up where it's going to end up.
Yeah.
But it's that hunt that is super rewarding. A lifetime.
This is rewarding. To me, after an hour, I go, wow, I really like Lillard. God, he was so full of life. So many great stories to tell.
I haven't told any stories. Have I?
Oh, yeah, you haven't really told. Aren't you glad we really didn't talk about like all the stuff that people always ask you about?
Yeah.
We really didn't, did we?
Are we done? I'm not done.
I didn't say we're done. I'm just saying,
keep going.
Like, for instance, okay, you have three children.
So many kids.
Are you emotional? Are you, do you show your emotions? Like, my dad never cried. My dad never told me he loved me. My dad, poor me. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying my dad was one of those tough guys, mowed the lawn without a grass catcher. Rocks and dog shit are flying in his face. He didn't care. And
have you told that story? Is that something, is that how you describe your dad often?
No, that was the first time I ever said that.
That is an amazing.
I wrote a pilot that I sold to Fox years ago, and that was the description of my father. That's the last time.
So have you taken that stoic nature in your life? I mean,
yeah, I think that I'm not going to blow smoke up my ass because I have a lot of fucking insecurities and weaknesses, but I definitely am a giving, loving, there for you when you need me person. And I'm also a very steal the spotlight kind of fucking center of attention, and can be annoying as shit, can be all those things. But I know that I'm actually have a really big heart, and right. I'm always available. So
are you an only child?
No, I'm kind of the middle kid. My mom had two kids and divorced, then married my dad when he was 18, had me, so the middle, then my brother, then my dad. They got divorced and he had two more kids. But it's kind of all over the place, but they don't talk. But anyway, so are you emotional with the kids? Do you see anything and you cry and your kids see you cry ever?
Is that why you're not in a long-term partnership?
Why?
Do you think that because your dad, I mean, the modeling of partnership that your dad had and sort of its result on you?
I mean, you
like
can't...
if you're like this caring person and you have this sense of depth.
Oh,
to
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's odd to me that you're not in a partnership. I mean, not that I'm judging it. I'm just curious. I mean, at some point, at 46, you said you're 46. 45?
Yeah, I'll be 47.
So the idea of like, why am I not in a partnership? It must be a question in your life somewhere, right?
I want to be in a partnership.
Yeah.
I really
so
do.
What is the thing?
I think I'm very picky. I think if I see any similarities with any woman with my mother.
Uh-huh.
I run as far as I can. If I see anything where it resembles any kind of, I don't want to be, you know, I'm not judgmental. I just know what's not right for me. I'm a, you know, I have a lot of energy kind of guy. I get sometimes a little moody. I'm usually funny. I'm always a good time. It's fun, but I'm very self-deprecating and I'm very open about everything. You know, I need someone who's not as the energy I am. I'm sure your wife is probably keeps you like she's.
Oh, we are diametrically opposed.
Exactly. And that's what I think I need. So, you know, I'm going on a date tonight, actually.
That's good. Do you know her?
Yeah, I met her on a dating site. And so what I do is I have these things where when I go out, I have a lunch. If we're taking a chance at like meeting for the first time, let's have lunch. Let's have a snack. Because you might not like me and you can go home in an hour because it's lunch. If I commit to a dinner with you, this could be a nightmare. Let's not set up a nightmare. We haven't met. Unless you want to FaceTime for a few times, do something to get to like see each other. So that's sort of my MO. I'm like, I think it's better than like going on tons of dates. It's like, hey, I don't even consider a date. It's like, hey, we're two friendly people seeing if we want to have a date later.
Sure. And when you sit down, is there pressure to be on?
No.
But you just said that I'm on a lot. That has to be.
Well, I'm
a
on
sense
because
of pressure.
I'm naturally on. Right. Like I'm not trying. No, I'm just kind of like, you know, I'll pretty much say everything. I'm not trying to impress them as much as I am trying to just like dissuade them. No, that's not true.
I'm trying to show you all the bad stuff in less than a lunch.
I shit with the door open sometimes. I don't want to miss anything.
No, here's where I am broken.
I'm broken in a lot of places, but I need, you know, but this one girl, she was, you know, look, it's
woman.
This woman. Did I say girl?
You did say girl.
Yeah, I didn't mean that. Is that condescending?
No.
Is that politically correct? I didn't
mean
that.
You're 45?
46? Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know.
So maybe it's best.
Look, I'm trying. I mean, maybe I don't want to be alone, but I don't want to get married because I don't want to be alone.
No, I want
to fall in love. I've been in relationships, but I just I don't like waking. Like I have two great dogs. You met them.
Great.
You wrestle with
them
on the floor. I love them, and I love them. And I have a great assistant. Sure. It's like a marriage, but we're not attracted to each other. We're just it's business, and she's cool, and you know it's nice to have someone who comes over every day, and we're you know, and I have friends. I have a good life. I have a good you know decent family. So unless it's just something that goes,
sure,
I go, wow, I'm not going to like just get married to get married.
God,
I'd love
no.
to have a kid.
God, no. God, no.
But you got lucky.
Yeah. Super lucky.
Is that the one you met in Europe or is that? Uh-huh. No.
Yeah.
She is. You didn't meet her in Europe. You brought her as a friend.
No, I met her at a party.
Heather.
And she said that they were going to Italy for this wedding and whatever happened in Italy, stayed in Italy. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to get my ass to Italy.
So you guys slept together in Italy?
No,
for sure.
We didn't.
You hooked up?
No.
You made out?
We did make out.
That was nice.
Yeah. By the time I left Italy, I was like, I'm going to marry that woman.
Did you ever think 20 years or 19 years later that you'd dye your hair blonde and then she wouldn't look at you?
She wouldn't care. She does not care even a little.
Are you guys still really in love?
Yeah. There's no doubt. I can't imagine my life without her. We're symbiotic.
Yeah.
But it's not like, it's very different than your first lunch. You know what I mean? You're like,
oh, yeah.
You know, you're battling, you're co-inhabiting to raise kids. You have, you know, that you're on a journey together. So I was at the point early on in my life. I'm like, oh, I'm never leaving. It doesn't even cross my mind. You're like, you're just on a journey together. We have like awesome, you ebb and flow. I mean, you have these moments where you're on fire and you go away for a weekend. You're like, oh my God, there's my wife. And
do you have those moments where you miss her and you're like, oh my God, I miss my wife.
Yeah, I mean, because I leave a lot and I miss my kid. You know, you miss the. I mean, I'm the guy that takes the kids to school. I pick them up. I go to soccer practice. I manage a soccer team for my kid.
Take them to Olive Garden.
Yeah, I'd never go Olive Garden. That's not my thing.
Okay,
I'm not a gardener.
But you're a good dad. You seem like a good dad, good husband.
I think I'm a good dad. I'm trying my damnedest to be a great dad. I mean, it's the same thing with being an actor. Like, I want to be a brilliant dad.
You want to be good at everything you do.
For things I care about, I want to strive to be incredible. For the things that I hold value in, I want to be amazing at. But there's all kinds of things I fall short on, and I make all kinds of mistakes, and I'm not brilliant at nearly anything.
You want to be 85 years old and still acting.
100%. I want to die an artist.
See, I really commend you for that, because I look at, like, even Dax is like, I just love acting. I don't care what it is. I go, well, I do. I care kind of what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I care what it is.
I mean, I've done a lot of bad stuff, you know?
He cares what it is. He's turned down things that are bad.
No, I'm just saying that he's like, he just loves to work, I think.
He
which,
does.
Which was
work.
A great thing. And I love to work, but he makes it sound like it's just so fun all the time. To me, 14, 16 hours a day doing the same fucking thing isn't that fun.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Look, I do think that you look at the shape of his career, he never had to go to Vancouver and work those 16-hour days.
Yeah.
Smallville is a, I'm assuming, because I do know that world, I've seen that world intimately, that when you're on that 14, 16, 17-hour grind, that it changes the way you look at it. It is as bad as any 9-to-5 job twice a day. I mean, you know, you're there for long periods of time.
Yeah, and it's for me, I think I just went into hibernation after. I was just kind of like, you know, I actually went off and did my movie and everything. I felt like I never really recovered. You know, you need that decompression, that downtime or whatever after you do projects. Don't you feel like you work on something, you feel like you just need to, or do you get ready for the next one?
Well, I've never had that grind. Dax never had that grind. I've never been on that procedural. I mean, I look at procedurals, I'm like, oh, I don't know how you do it. It's so hard. It's so long. They're long days and they're not a lot of reward in the work. So,
that's the hardest thing to come in.
Yes, for sure. It's a weird thing. You don't know anyone. It's like you're at somebody's Thanksgiving. It's like, I'm going to try to do the best I can to like hang in here.
Yeah.
But that's like, I can jump into that world because I know I'm jumping out. You know, but like my jobs that I've had on TV have been like, I'm on Good Girls now. I work, you know, 3 days a week.
Where's Good Girls?
Good Girls, NBC.
NBC.
It's on.
Do you love it?
It's awesome. I have a great job.
What number are you on the call sheet?
4.
Ooh, you like that, don't you?
I think I'm 4. Yeah, I work with Christina Hendricks all the time. She's
great. I met her
amazing
once.
Human
she
being.
Is so awesome.
So sweet. And like our showrunners are great. And we're doing a show that's like outside the box. It's awesome.
See?
Yeah, it's good.
Life's good.
Life is good.
It's really good. You seem like a genuinely happy. You don't get depression, bouts of depression?
I do, but here's the thing. My life is super active. The idea of like, you know, the dignity of work, like the idea, like I'm not like for a long time, I would wait for a long time. I would call my manager, or my agent. I'd be like, hey, I need a job. And I was defined by what I was doing. I just started Dungeons and Dragons company with my five best friends.
Yeah, dude. I,
I like do this thing with kids at 5 Acres where we create the slam poetry one night. There's a thing called Hatch where, you know, people out there are trying to save the world, and that community is a community I'm involved in.
Jeez, you teach in Vancouver.
I teach all the time. I mean, I literally will pull into a city. I'll be like, I'm here. Can I teach? I mean, I was
How do you have the time and you have a family and a wife?
But you have to, like, I go back to like, what are you doing during the day? The idea is like, you have time. Like I'm really good at FIFA. I'm really good at Xbox FIFA. I love FIFA.
So you take time every week to play little games.
Yes, but I go through those periods. Like I will go and I will take a team from, you know, the whole season. I'll play a whole season of FIFA soccer in a week. But then I'm like, I got to go back and I have to be active. I've got to do stuff outside of this job, outside of this business.
If you weren't busy, you'd go crazy.
I feel like I have more going on than most people because I like doing things. I like being
You're
around
a leader.
People and I like going, we should go that way. And we have a company called Hive Be Good and we throw events where people come together to, you know, to group think how to change the world. I mean, it's, you know, that's kind of stuff. You're like, now you're sitting with like leaders in their community trying to fix homelessness or affordable housing or how to get gang members back into the world and give them dignity. I mean, these are things you're like, oh, these moments are bigger than me. So it makes like the idea of like going out and chasing a job. Okay, I got that because I'm doing all these things. This is no longer as important as because you've got all these other things going on.
Jesus, I feel like such a loser.
Tyler. I mean, you have a podcast and you said you're planning on starting another. That's like you podcasts. Said, you love doing this. You love talking to him and talking to.
Yeah. You know. But also I'm like, you know, maybe sometimes it's like, you know, I'm doing so much, but I feel like I'm doing things like I'm doing this podcast for me. I'm doing all these, not just for me.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I tracked you down.
I'm glad. Yeah,
I am, because I was pretty persistent and I just, you know.
It's good. I wanted to do it. I just...
No, I know. You got... Listen, like, oh, God. It's obvious how much shit you got going on. But, you know, I met you... Did I meet you on Without a Paddle? Through Dax?
No, before that. I knew you somehow before that.
Was that New
we
York?
We met friends... Was Seth Green?
Could have been Seth, yeah.
There's people in this career, in this life, you're like, I've known you forever. We've been friendly forever. But I don't know how we ever became friends at first. We never worked together.
Yeah. You have so much like insight. Like I want you to be my therapist.
Yeah, I'm not good at that.
Why? You do so many things.
Is that his podcast?
That may
Every
be
week a... you well, guys that... get together. It's a therapy session
it's
for
It's just
you.
A therapy session for me. It's just yeah. Rosenbaum and Willow's therapy sessions every week.
As we dig in.
Oh, man. Well, what a treat.
Well, thanks, bud.
Thanks, boy. Thanks for coming over.
Cheers, man.
All right.
Welcome to Talkville, the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker. Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going? Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.